On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask, why did ESPN say Derek Carr is soft? We have an Ndamukong Suh update, kind of semi-non-update. And Jamarcus Russell blasts the Raiders. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. The rare live podcast show. Normally, we don't do it live. Normally, we just record it, right? So we can edit in some stuff. We've got interviews we did earlier.
Make it look pretty, all that shit.
You know.
We grimy today. We grimy.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, we want to give Soto time to put his lipstick on. But because there's just so much shit to get to, like today, we wanted to get to it right away. Like, we're not going to be able to get to everything on this rundown. So we'll just, you know, keep tabs of Soto's, little special shows that he does. Only 60 days. We're going to start the countdown now. 60 days until the Raiders opening day, opening up with the Cardinals.
I'm not going to take offense to that. You know, because, like, oh, it's Soto's little show. He's a little show. You know, yeah, he does.
They're quaint. They're cute.
I'm not going to take offense to that. They're little as in they're shorter than the normal shows.
Yeah.
But they're packed full of girth.
Yeah. You want to do a show like your dick. You know what I mean? Just fits. 60 days to opening day.
They don't call me Girthquake for nothing.
Well, we're doing the countdown now. Basically two months away from opening day. Can't come soon enough. So excited. We're going to get to that here in a little bit. But right off the bat, Zach's back, baby. Zach is back. So if you had to have heard the news. If you haven't, we'll fill you in. Get out from under that rock. Zach Wilson, quarterback for the New York Jets. Number 2 overall pick, BYU. He scrubbed his ex-girlfriend from the social media. I never understood that. It's like, they're trying to erase the history? Like, what's going on here? But he did. And so the ex-girlfriend posted a picture with Zach's old roommate and best friend from BYU, who's now a wide receiver with the Commanders. And someone called her a homie hopper. And so she said, the real homie hopper is Zach because he was banging his mom's best friend. Internet lost its mind, rightfully so. This is my favorite story of the week.
Oh, easily. My God. I spent some time on it and I had to jump on because I didn't really have anything planned last night. But I'm thinking to myself, no, dude, I got to jump on and talk about this. Or Monday night, excuse me. I got to jump on and talk about this because I just got to give my thoughts. So, number one, Zach Wilson in no way, shape, or form is a homie hopper because his homie wasn't banging his mom's best friend. That wasn't his buddy.
I wouldn't put it past him. It sounds like a big swinging group they got going on over there in Utah.
If she looks anything like Zach Wilson's mom, Zach Wilson's mom is a banger.
Yeah, and hot chicks hang out in packs. They travel in pods like orcas. Yeah.
But, dude, what's up with fucking, what's his name, Dax Milne?
Yeah.
The best friend? Dude, that is like, not only were you a teammate, a roommate, a best friend, and now you're banging homegirl, whether Abby Milne?
Her name isn't important. Just
Abby somewhere other? Abby Guile.
Who's Cox Insider is what's most important. And that's like full like vengeance mode, right? Like if you're the chick and you start banging the roommate, best friend, that is some Pornhub level plot right there. Like you're getting,
she's gonna have old expense very quickly. She's gonna be on stage very quickly. This is the mentality here. Cause she went from second pick in the draft, quarterback for the Jets to practice squad, like
undrafted,
He was undrafted. Fringe, practice squad on the real squad wide receiver.
Yeah, she's gonna have a reality show. She's gonna have a podcast. She's gonna have an OnlyFans. She's gonna go big. And so we're like, all right, how's Zach handling all this? Because he just like went off the grid. He just like disappeared. Well, he's doing fine. He said, took the boys to Gozer Ranch Club, Idaho before camp. Poor cell service. What did I miss? Just great.
Look, man.
I think what happened was he initially had the news broke and he's like, oh my God, this is so bad. This is terrible. And then he realized that all everyone did was just go, nice, banging mom's best friend. Like everyone like hyped him up. Like his teammates for sure gave him like a standing ovation when he entered the locker room. All his boys are hitting him up like, hey, let's party at your mom's friend's house. Like, let's do this. Like he had to have thought like, oh man, this end of my career is so embarrassing. But everyone's just giving him air high fives.
I think from the very beginning, he knew what was up because he did the whole scrub and everything. Mm-hmm. Like he was very comfortable. So I got like two ends of the spectrum here on my live show. I got like people that were like, yes, MILF action for life, all this stuff. You remember the old school Panama Joe's days before it was the Panama Joe's. It was a MILF bar. It was a straight up MILF bar. And that was the spot. And I was saying, look, if you're the quarterback of the New York Jets, those 21-year-olds, those are going to be there for life. Those are going to be there forever. You can be in your 40s if you're an NFL, ex-NFL player, especially if you stay in the New York area. Those 20-year-olds, they're going to be there no matter what. If you find yourself, that window, that MILF window is very small. If you find yourself a prime MILF, go for it, bro. Go for it.
They're like avocados. They take a long time to get ripe, and then they go unripe real fast.
Yeah, you got to get that window. Time,
you can spread it. Whatever you want.
Older women, like, they got their own money. They don't want too much from you. Like, they already got their own life going on. Like, they don't want to spend every single waking moment with you.
They know every trick in the sack. They're going to teach you some things.
They don't want to take selfies everywhere the hell you go. Like, bro. Look, if you haven't had yourself, if you're out there and you're in the dating pool, not if you're with somebody, I'm not going to judge, whatever, do what you want. But what I'm saying is if you're out there and you have the opportunity to try to find yourself an older woman, at least 10 years older, because I'm telling you right now, the expectations are set very low. Trust me.
Well, the thing is, Soto, you're so old now that you're the age of MILFs. So like, you're dating MILFs.
But fuck, you're like 3 years younger than me.
Dating your colleagues. Yeah, but I'm on the good side of 40.
Oh, God.
For another, like, 11 months.
Yeah, you're almost there.
All I know is the Jets are going 17-0. Like, why even play the Super Bowl? Like, Zach Wilson's going to throw for 7,000 yards. Like, that guy has the you look at him, he's like, oh, like a little baby face, just innocent Mormon boy.
You got a baby arm hanging, too.
Slinging D everywhere. So,
Steve the Cockfighter on my show, he commented that this is the first time, like, He's good to be done with his chick because she's a homie hopper and he's done with her. Mm. And this is the first time he made a good pre-snap read in his life. So if that pre-snap, if that like little spidey sense hops into the season, yeah, 17-0.
Who's going to play him and the mom in an inevitable porno? Like this porno is being filmed as we speak. And it's going to make the rounds here shortly.
So good.
You'd have to play one of, like the little guys. The little guys that's always banging like the MILF. It really is the title of it really is like one of the most common Pornhub titles. Mom's best friend seduces young boy. Like that's Milfie, that goes around. Yeah,
MILF and the Jets. MILFie and the Jets.
Good for you. Good for you.
What if her name is like Benny or Jenny? Jenny and the Jets. Jenny and the Jet. That'd
it's probably so like sweet. Ruth, something old.
She's not that old, man.
Who knows? We don't know. His mom's like late 40s, 50?
No, his mom is not that old. Her mom is, they're Mormon, bro. They have the kids young. So if he's like 21, 22, she's probably like my age. Maybe even a little younger.
See? Your MILF age.
Don't bitches slang them out quick.
So I didn't expect to be talking about Jamarcus Russell today. Not a word, not a name I want to.
I always welcome Jamarcus Russell talk because it's always going to be hilarious.
My buddy that I work with at the UFC's producer at the UFC, giant Charger fan, had like season tickets like the first 20 years of his life. Giant Charger.
He's the one.
And we have a rule. Yeah, he's one of the seven. We have a rule. I never bring up Ryan Leaf. He never brings up Jamarcus Russell. It's like the nuclear option, right? It's like why countries don't nuke each other because they don't want to get nuked back. That's what it is. So even Charger fans understand what it means to bring up Jamarcus Russell to the Silver and Black. and just what a waste of space and what a bust, like the ultimate bust, the ultimate NFL bust in the history of the sport. He doesn't feel that way. He recently did an interview with Ryan Grant, and I'm not going to play it all because who knows if they're going to like copyright us. But this is just snippets. I listened to the whole hour and a half. I'll never get that hour and a half back of my life, but this is just a few snippets of what he said. He was asked about like that, the story of his coaches gave him game film on a tape, but it was blank. And so they said like, and then the next day they're like, "Hey, what'd you think of that game film? Like any plays?" Like, "Yeah, I liked all of them." Like acted like he watched it, 'cause they knew he was a lazy piece of shit and he got caught. And so he was asked about that. And his response was, "Why would you play a fucking game with my life? Why would you fuck me over? You're supposed to be teaching me so we can get better, man. I never got that. LSU wouldn't have done no shit like that." Blames the coaches for the fact that an NFL quarterback, starting NFL quarterback, first rounder, doesn't watch game film.
You know, nothing would surprise me coming out of that man's mouth.
Doesn't watch game film.
There's a reason why he never played for another team, because it's not there. Talent can get you a long way. Yeah. And people like Josh Gordon, like Antonio Brown, like guys like that, they keep getting chances because they're talented. But when you're talented and you're just incredibly lazy and just a shit person to be around. I think there was a quarterback. What was his name? Billy Joe Tolliver or something like that. Billy Joe something.
Sounds like an assassin.
He played one game for the Bills after being the backup quarterback. And then he admitted in the post game, not press conference, but like in, you know, interviews with like the local beat writers, that he didn't look at the game plan for that week.
Yeah.
And he never got another chance with another team.
Think how crazy it is that a number one draft pick never got a second chance. Like, think about that. Like,
there's a reason for it.
Josh Rosen.
The Rosen one.
What, 10th overall?
I thought 10th, something like that.
Wasn't number one, but he was a first rounder. High first rounder.
Yeah, first rounder.
He's been on five different teams. And he's a free agent right now. He will be on an NFL roster come this season at some point. He's gotten five chances working on his sixth. Josh Rosen. And yet Jamarcus Russell couldn't get one team to like give him a tryout, fly him out, see if it works. Because his play was so terrible, and he had the worst possible reputation you can have for an NFL quarterback. Lazy, doesn't pay attention, didn't give a
shit. Doesn't work. Look, the thing is, it's like, okay, if you play poorly, there's gotta be a reason why. Because you're not a bad player. You know, like you're not a bad player. Like you were drafted high for a reason. You were given a shot for a reason. You had to have shown something on tape. Now, if you're not performing as a professional, there's one big difference between professional sports than in college sports, even college football. You get paid a whole lot more in the pros. Because I'm not going to be stupid enough to think that Jamarcus Russell didn't get paid at LSU. Okay, so you get paid a whole hell of a lot more in the pros. So what's his motivation? He already signed his contract. He's got 31 and change coming to him no matter what. All he has to do is not slit somebody's throat and he's going to get paid. So it's like, that's when you figure out, okay, why is he not performing? That's why a lot of these retreads just bounce around the league, because coaches are like, okay, I can get him to work. I can get him, you know, these guys
I can
did
fix
this
him.
Wrong. These guys did that wrong. And you They're know, like, that's one of the reasons
coaches are like girls with daddy issues. Like, I can fix him.
I can fix him. Oh, no. Yeah. It's my fault.
No one even gave a shot at Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like one of the reasons Derek Carr has been given the keys for so long with the Raiders, even though they've lost so much, is you can point to all these different factors as to why, you know, his record is what it is as a starting quarterback. So you can point to any of that with his, you start with Jamarcus Russell, his work ethic, his commitment, his overall play, his lackluster, just attitude towards anything resembling hard work. He gained weight every single year he was in the league. You know, he refused help from the Raiders wanted to get him a dietitian. They wanted to get him all this, like a freaking chef and all this shit. He didn't want to do any of that shit. He's like, I got this. Don't trip. I'm good. He's blamed a bunch of shit. Like, the coaches were out to get me. I had sleep apnea. That's why I was falling asleep kinds all the of time. All kinds of shit.
He was asked, like, all right, are you a cautionary tale? He said, I wasn't doing crazy shit. I was just trying to relax, chill, trying to win some football games. Unfortunately, I wasn't winning, but I was dealt a bullshit hand. I'm at practice, bro, and these folks couldn't catch a reverse, bro. Six plays straight, but you want to go downfield and catch a 90-yard pass. I was dealt a harsh hand. Motherfucker, you're the number one overall draft pick. You're going to the worst team in the league. That's how it works. You're supposed to carry this franchise. You're supposed to, like, uplift everybody, right? Like, Joe Burrow, other quarterback from LSU, like, he took the worst team in the world to the Super Bowl. Like, yeah, that's what you were brought on to do, was uplift these guys. And what's he do? Blaming the wide receivers. I'm just trying to chill. I'm just trying to relax. It's like, look, if he was a bust, right? He just didn't work out for whatever reason. And the Raiders were bad back then, right? For whatever reason. You can always lean back on, well, I'm a hard worker. I study hard. I'm a good teammate. Like, those are things that'll keep you in the league. When you don't have any of that, when you suck and you don't work hard, you don't have a leg to stand on in the NFL.
And it's like, okay, you understand, like you said, you understand you're going to a position where it's going to be tough in the beginning. You could catch fire, maybe grab a couple of guys here and there that turn something around. Maybe, you know, ball bounces your way here and there, and you maybe sneak into the playoffs or something your first year. But you know you're going into a position. And, like, look, he held out for way too much money. Al Davis finally blinked and gave him a shit ton of money. He came in to the season. He signed his contract right after the season started, right?
He held out. And
yeah, he had zero training camp. He had zero preseason, nothing. He came in after, I think, the second week of the year.
Six-year contract, signed. $68 million, 31.5 guaranteed.
How much was that bonus money up front? Like, he got a big bonus up front, too.
I think it was like $9 million, and the Raiders tried to recoup it, and Jamarcus countersued, and the Raiders had to pay him another $3 million of that guaranteed money.
That's crazy.
And that's the whole point. Like, I listened to the whole interview, and his whole thing was like, that's the reason you don't see him around anymore. Like, once he was in the NFL, he's like, I made it. I have that guaranteed money. I'm good. I don't have to work anymore. Like, I think that was his goal. Get that lump sum and you're done. Like, he genuinely did not care about anything else. He got his money. He's like, c'est la vie. I'm good.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, it's like, when I talk to people about Jamarcus Russell, and they're like, oh, you fucking, how could you guys have taken him, this and that? I'm like, look, you have to understand the situation, what was going on in the Raiders at that time. It was Al Davis making a decision. You tell me that Al Davis flew out and had all this time to talk to guys pre-draft. He looked at that freaking 70-yard pass from his knee, from one knee, and he's like, that's the guy I want. The arm that he has, that's the guy I want. Now, the physical talents, you can't argue with that. The physical talents were there. At LSU, when he was playing, like, the whole rah-rah shit, fucking all the Bengal Tigers and all this, the Bayou Bengals and all this crap. Yeah, he was trying hard and he was working hard. And once he got to the NFL, the way they gauged at the time, the way they gauged draft picks was, okay, how good of a player is this guy? They really didn't look at the character of this guy. I mean, they got freaking Lawrence Jackson from USC, and that guy was a head case too. He was the second overall pick. Goddamn, a lot. I don't want to talk about that. A lot of high bad draft picks.
SC.
Yeah,
I feel you.
Get the fuck out of here with that.
Pride of the Big Ten.
Yeah, you're gonna be. So,
but look, like,
that's the big whiff. The big whiff wasn't the physical. Everyone wants to talk about all these interceptions. The physical wasn't the issue. It was, they didn't get to know him as a person. They didn't get to know his work ethic. I don't even know if they really talked to anybody at LSU. It's just a bad pick overall.
Drinking scissorp everywhere he went.
Everywhere. At the stadium.
Just codeined out of his mind. Oh, just party mode constantly. And look, this is, again, another reminder. Like, Derek Carr's been through the same shit that Jamarcus Russell's been through, right? Terrible team for a long time, you know. First few
ups
years,
downs,
real bad, right? What'd he do? Stayed the course. I want to win here. Like, and that's something that, like, Derek Carr thrives on, right? Like, Jamarcus Russell's like, well, I want everything perfect. Like, I want, you know, the best wide receivers, the best line, best coaching. Well, Derek Carr's like, no, I want to take this team. I want to say I dragged this Raiders team that was shit for a decade and a half and took them to the promised land. Jamarcus Russell's like, no, I want everything laid out for me, and I don't want to work hard, and I don't want to watch tape, and I want to be high on scissor the whole time. That's all.
It's pretty much like, look, we know, we all know those people who just bad shit just seems to happen to them. No matter what, even when they're on the straight and narrow, just bad stuff seems to happen to them. And you would talk to them about it, and nothing is ever their fault. Oh, well, I got fired from this job because, oh, my boss didn't like me and this and that. And I got an F in this class. Like, oh, the teachers didn't like me. And it's like, are you that unlikable? Like, why are we friends? Like, why are you that unlikable a person, you know? And it's exhausting to be around a person like that.
And the common denominator in all those bad situations is you.
Yeah.
You got to look in the mirror, because he blamed receivers. He blamed Tom Cable. Like, he thought Tom Cable was out to get him. Because, yeah, that's what every head coach wants, is to have a number one overall draft pick fail on their watch. Yeah, that's really how coaches keep their head coaching job. Is by pissing off their starting quarterback, number one overall, with a $66 million contract. Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's the thing, man. Like, everything, nothing is their fault. Nothing is their. And then whenever you kind of pin them down into a corner, mm-hmm. they have nothing to say, and they just get mad, and they just answer with anger. You know, like when he's like, "Oh yeah, why would they do that? Why would they play games with me? This and that." Well, did you watch the tape or not? Ah, it gets all pissed off and blah blah blah. Get the fuck out of here, Jamarcus Russell. Even people in Alabama didn't. He was from Alabama. Even people from Alabama didn't like him. Mm-hmm. He went back and like he got robbed a couple times, and like they were just like, "You're a punk, dude."
Hey, it was stolen money. The money that he had from the Raiders, might as well steal it back. It's hot money.
Yeah, that's like what do you call that? The karma coming back to him. He stole money. Now they steal it from him.
So from one terrible first overall draft pick to one of the best value picks in Raiders history. Max Crosby was with our buddy Bruce Buffer on the Bruce Buffer podcast.
Yeah, Bruce Buff.
Yeah, he's our boy Bruce.
Bruce.
Our lives intersect like that. And Max talked about a bunch of stuff. I posted a short about Max talking about how Rich Bisaccia was like such a good coach and all this stuff. But Bruce asked him about having Josh McDaniels. Now, remember how I framed this question and then listened to Mad Max's answer, right? Bruce asked him, hey, brand new head coach, how's that going?
You know, honestly, it's been incredible. You know, obviously, it's all new. I have a bunch of new teammates, but our core guys are still here. That's really important. You know, having Derek, re-signing, having, obviously myself, Hunter Renfro, all those guys, Darren Waller, we're all coming back. But also adding some fuel onto that, getting a Davante Adams, a Chandler Jones, guys that are superstars, but also humble and hard workers. And that's hard to find. Yeah, just building this team. And, I think Coach McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, the GM, have done an incredible job. And OTAs have really showed, guys are really bought in. Everyone's, selfless and committed to this new way of playing and new way of, new system and new everything. But everyone's bought in because we know we have more than enough ability to go out there and win games. But at the end of the day, it's the team that is the closest and has that tight-knit bond that ends up winning it in the end. So that's what we've been working on, just working on our relationships and getting closer as a team. And I feel like we're definitely on our way.
So he was asked about your new head coach, Josh McDaniels, and he addressed it, but he starts and ends it talking about the team unity and how much the guys care about each other. Like, that's such a running theme with this team. Like, it's what willed this team into the playoffs last season, beating on a 4-game stretch, beating teams that were more talented than us. And it's like the running theme of this team. He was asked about Josh McDaniels. He started talking about Carr and leadership in the locker room.
That makes me a lot more, I'm always already optimistic about the whole Josh McDaniels experiment, basically.
Yep.
That makes me think even higher of it, because that doesn't come from nowhere.
Yeah.
That comes from leadership as well. And it's not just team leadership, because if your head coach is not preaching that togetherness, preaching that, all pull on the same end of the rope, same direction type of thing, it's going to come out somewhere. You're going to find something. But he even glanced over it himself. Hey, you know what? New plays are what they are, but it's all about, getting used to playing with my guys. And honestly, that's really what Josh McDaniels and Patrick Graham, they say too. It's like, look, yeah, we have a lot of plays. We're going to have very specific game plans week to week, but ultimately it's about getting used to playing with each other. So when you're a good teacher, you can focus on the human side of your team and not just the teaching X's and O's side.
Coming from a guy who's used to playing with himself, playing with each other is
great partner.
Great partner. It also kind of goes with the theme that we've been hearing about Josh McDaniels kind of directly and indirectly from players. Derek Carr said it. Devontae Adams said it. How they're like, they're making it team and on the individual, right? Like Josh McDaniels is not John Gruden. It's not like I'm the star of the show. We're doing things my way. It's like, what do you guys want to do? Like, I have some great stuff. Let's take, what's your opinion? Okay. Let's incorporate that. Devontae, like what's your opinion on that? Let's do that. Like it's just so player specific, which was one of the biggest issues that Josh McDaniels had when he was in Denver as head coach, was he had the X's and O's. He was just brain dead when it came to dealing with humans. And so everything we're hearing about Josh McDaniels, same thing with like when players talk about Derek Carr, they don't say, oh, his arm's amazing. He's so smart. Preston Emery is like, oh, I love the guy. I love the human being. Everything we're hearing about Josh McDaniels, like, hey, what about the X's and O's? How's he doing? Oh man, he loves us. He's so selfless. He's brought the guys that are the same way. Like, it's just, that's the running theme. It's just these guys, just that team unity. And it's something that you can't measure it, but you can't put a price on it.
And it feeds that internal like bar, you know, yeah. Like everyone has this bar to hit. Everyone has this expectation to hit. And when it comes internally, that's a lot stronger than anything that can be put on you as a player from a coach or anything else. You guys keep each other accountable. And when you involve groups of people, like when you, like, we're going to probably get to it in a little bit. When you watch film as a team, like offensive film as a whole group watching offensive film, not just broken down into different, you know, position groups, you get to know what everyone else is doing at an intimate level. So, you know, it helps you play within that system.
So ESPN did their list of, you know, top 10 of each position, and it's execs, coaches, and players anonymously that vote on these spots, right? Do you know where Derek Carr landed on the list?
I didn't look at it on purpose.
Okay. You want to guess?
Probably like 12, 11, Matt.
That's exactly where he landed. So they did top 10 and then honorable mention. And
I've been saying all along.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very fair. Very fair spot. And they were actually pretty complimentary until they got to one part. An offensive coach said his film was really good. The guy was one of the best third down passers in the NFL last year. I'll skip this part. He also said early in his career, what is it? He had trouble driving the ball vertically, but that doesn't appear to be an issue anymore. He can hit all parts of the field and looks in command. Very complimentary. But there's one line that Raider fans went nuts over. He lacks a little toughness at times. That's my only real knock on him. Won't stand in there. What? Of all the criticisms you can levy on Derek Carr, that's the one? Toughness? He's missed 2 games in 9 seasons. Have you seen his injury history? Like, MCL sprain, fractured finger, fractured fibula, chest rib bruise, concussion, thumb sprain, ankle sprain, he broke his fucking back and didn't miss 1 game. And you're saying he's lacking toughness? Like, that's the thing you want to get on Carr on? What?
I think we're looking at it a little bit differently than what he meant it. I think he's talking about in-game toughness, not injury toughness. Because I've had that same criticism of him at times as well, where, like, the Bears game. He got hit a couple times early, and, you know, he doesn't stand in the pocket. He even said it himself. He lacks a little toughness. He doesn't stand in there. He doesn't stand in the pocket.
He did last season.
Well, the thing is, it takes a long time to turn around.
But even that criticism isn't true anymore, right? Like, it's like, bro, look, he moves in the pocket so well.
I get what you're saying, man, but you have to look at it from this perspective. If you're getting 9 year or 7 years worth of data from someone, and then 1 year, it's just, it's not as bad. It's not going to change your opinion of somebody. I mean, it's like saying that, okay, next year, Carr only fumbles 5 times. It's like, oh, he fixes fumble issues. Like, well, let's see if that continues. You know, but I'm not saying that I agree or disagree. I am saying that I've had this criticism of him in the past in game. Joey Bosa said it last year that you hit him a couple times and, you know, he's not the same quarterback as if he's able to stand up.
Taking the word
upright
of a Charger now.
I'm not saying that again. I'm not saying that it's, I agree or disagree or it's true or it's not true. That is the feeling in the NFL. And a lot of different people are not going to feel the same way if there's not something there to point to it. I'm not saying that it's prevalent.
Good.
I'm not saying that it's.
I'm glad he has that reputation because it ain't true, right? I want them to think,
you can't
he's gonna fold in the pocket. We just got to put pressure
on. You can't say that.
I can't say that. It's not true. It's absolutely not true. What definition of toughness has he not shown?
Look, you're thinking of toughness as like he's not going to get out there on the field. Okay? What they're saying is he's not going to be the same player, like the same criticism that Tom Brady has. It's the same exact criticism that they have of him. You hit him a couple times early, and he's not the same guy.
He literally played better after the sacks in that Charger game that Joey Bosa was talking about.
You're talking about one game, RJ. You're talking about one game.
That's how he is in general. That's just the best example I can give.
I don't know if that's true or not. I think that people who watch him play and watch film on him play and have seen him play up close, they would know more than you about this issue.
They clearly don't. I guarantee.
Just because you don't agree with it doesn't mean they're wrong, RJ.
It does. I guarantee that this
NFL offensive coach,
right? He's a coach on some other team. I guarantee I watch more film on Derek Carr than he does, right? How many
I doubt that.
100% I watch more Derek Carr than he does. Like, he's got his own crew to worry about. There's 31 other quarterbacks. He's going to, like, study Derek Carr as much as you and I? 0% chance.
I'm not trying to hate on Derek Carr because that's not what I'm doing right now.
That's why he has this antiquated view of him. Like, he just, like, this is what he thought of him in, like, 2015, and he's just, like, rolling with it now.
Dude, this was Derek Carr in 2020, in 2021. You're saying that, like, again, it's going to take a long time for people's opinions of Derek Carr to change. He has to do a lot. And I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm not saying that it's all his doing.
I think this coach watches Derek Carr like you.
There's a stigma on Derek Carr that's going to take a while for it to go away. Just like the stigma that Matthew Stafford had. That's pretty much gone away because he won a goddamn Super Bowl. I'm not saying that he has to go to that extent to get that stink off of him, but he has a specific stink on him, whether it's his fault or not. He does have one.
I'm glad that Derek Carr has a stink he didn't deserve, that people like this offensive coach and you and all the other people who like shit on Derek Carr for things that aren't.
Again, I'm not shitting on Derek Carr.
How about this? This is clearly proof that he doesn't watch Derek Carr film. He's like, the one thing I can say is his toughness. Turnovers? Like, there's clearly the number one thing wrong with Derek Carr.
Read the entire statement. Read the entire statement. Not just toughness. No, you didn't. Read the whole sentence.
He lacks a little toughness at times. That's my only real knock on him. Won't stand in there.
Okay, that's different than he won't get on the field.
Every definition of toughness he's shown. That's my point.
Okay.
And my other point is, when he has a very clear number one weakness, like, love Carr, hate Carr, universally
his
Raider Nation agrees.
His turnovers are god-awful. His
turnovers are his problem. Like, that's not even, like, there's no close second. Like, turnovers, he's a turnover machine.
Yeah. He would have to.
That's the number one problem. And if they don't bring that up, it's like, I don't think Derek Carr very well. Yeah.
He'd have to get, like, 50% more touchdown tosses to warrant that high of a turnover number.
It's like, you're not watching Derek Carr if that's the number one thing you think is wrong with him.
Definitely it's the turnovers. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying he's not tough. He wanted to go back in. He was pissed because they would let him go back into that Charger game 2 years ago, the one that Marcus Mariota went in. But yeah, I mean, he's not going to miss a lot of games because of an injury.
Yeah, only two in 9 seasons. So we got an Ndamukong Suh update.
Kind of.
A couple of them. We kind of do. We got a couple updates. So he's been tied to the Raiders. Obviously, you said over 50% chance to think the Raiders are going to sign him. I'm less confident. I think under
50.5.
50, but just shade. 50 plus 1% chance. So you're really, really having a strong take on your Ndamukong Suh to the Raiders, clearly.
Kind of like your take on Josh McDaniels, but let's move on.
Yeah, it's my ass is still sore from sitting on the fence on Josh McDaniels. Absolutely. I'm cautiously optimistic is like the strongest take I can have. Although all the signs are pointing in the right direction. Like all, you know, for whatever words are worth, they're all kind of going in the right direction for like my very specific issues.
I'm telling you, man, I don't want to hijack this portion, but dude, like I've went through a lot of mergers in my life. Mm-hmm. When I worked at AT&T, I went through 4 mergers in like 6 years. And we used to call AT&T at the time. That's I was like, oh, that's what it stands for at the time. And you can tell by when the new leader comes in and starts talking, you can tell, you can pick up on things. You can tell, okay, this guy's going to be good, or this guy's, nah. And, I mean, it sounded good to me. But Ndamukong Suh.
So Ndamukong Suh would be a splash signing for the Raiders. We've got the cap space. We can certainly use a bullying nose tackle, especially specifically in Patrick Graham's 3-4. Seems to fit. Super durable. You know, what's the price, right? Does he fit this awesome locker room? Yet to be figured out. But he's on the apparently the Raiders were on the short list. So we got a update today from Tyler Dragon of, I think it's USA Today. The Browns are another team interested in Ndamukong Suh per source. Expect Suh to sign with the club roster, with a club closer to the start of training camp. The Vikings and Raiders are two other teams that have talked to the free agent defensive tackle. So it was the Browns for a while, and it's not the Browns anymore. Vikings and Raiders are still there. Everyone's just kind of waiting around, seeing what's going on. So like, oh, okay, now there's a third team in the hunt for Ndamukong Suh. This kind of changes things a little bit. Hours later, Mary Kay Cabot tweets, have written several times this offseason that the Browns are not interested in Ndamukong Suh. Nothing's changed. Getting little conflicting reports there, Soto.
She said, Tyler Dragon, fuck your source.
Now, this is what's interesting. This is the part that's interesting to me. Tyler Dragon's from USA Today, right? National NFL writer. Mary Kay writes for like the Cleveland Times, local city beat writer. Where does she? I think it's the Cleveland Times. Where is she? Cleveland.com.
Rocks.
Right? Cleveland.com.
She writes for the city, bro.
Right. So it's, and what, I've explained this on the show multiple times. When you've got negotiations going on, when you've got free agency going on, when teams are, you know, seeing who blinks first when they're trying to get talent, agents are always pushing out false information, right? Or they're pushing out stuff that makes their client look great. Obviously, Ndamukong Suh's agent, I don't know who it is, I should have looked it up, wants as many people bidding for his services as possible. That's just going to raise the price, right? That's what everyone wants. But Mary Kay Cabot is saying that's not the case. I'm going to go with Mary Kay on this one because genuinely, if you're the beat writer, you know what's going on in that building pretty well, right? You've got sources, you know scouts, you know coaches, you know players. You've got kind of an inside look at things. When you're a national writer, you're probably talking to the agent. Tyler Dragon probably got a call from Ndamukong Suh's agent saying, yeah, the Browns are in now.
Jimmy Sexton is his name.
Exactly. Jimmy Sexton. Sounds like a porn star.
Yeah.
So he's doing his job as an agent, trying to stir up interest. So just a little look, you know, Ndamukong Suh, we don't have like a major update, just kind of a little glimpse behind the curtain on how the media, free agency, and agents work.
Yeah, Mary Kay and Ashley are all going to get a bouquet of roses from us for keeping that price low, driving that price down. Don't get a third team in there. That's going to just make the price go.
Right. I've got to get a Vikings writer on here and just be like, hey, are the Vikings seriously interested or is this just bullshit? Because if it's just the Raiders, baby, drive that, get them cheap.
JR, you got the check mark, JR. You should just put it out there.
Right? Just do
Vikings
it.
Don't really want to do it.
Hashtag Vikings per sources are no longer interested in Ndamukong Suh.
Brad talking to himself from his own lips to my own ears told me they're not going to sign his ass.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, we got to start doing that. We got to start sending some
red
some
herring,
false some info out there, to try to help our boys out, you know?
I'm down.
So the big news for the Raiders, new team president. It's our third one in like 10 months. Hopefully we have some stability. Sandra Douglas Moran. If she's as good as a team president as she is beautiful, we've got a good run for us.
Dude, it's crazy that Douglas is spelled A-S-S at the end. That's amazing. Douglas. That's how it's spelled, too.
I'm not I know. Doug with that ass. Okay, we're being disrespectful. She's a lady. She's an attorney. So you heard dimples, what I've been bro. Saying.
Look at those dimples. I can eat Cheerios out of those dimples. My beautiful. God.
So obviously the big story, you know, the national story about her is that she's the first black female team president in NFL history. And that's the big story, right? And that's always something that like the fans of the other 31 teams and non-NFL fans, that's what they care about, right? More, you know, more diversity, NFL's, you know, making them, and of course it's the Raiders, of course, make the most progressive team in the NFL, maybe the most progressive team in American sports, right? The other 31 fans of the teams and non-NFL fans, like that's what they care about. We just care that she's good, right? I don't care how tall you are, black, white, man, woman, like we're Raider fans. Like we just care that you're good. That's the only thing we care about.
Yeah, you know, like it's one thing to look and say, oh wow, I'd be shocked. And I even told you and Rory, I'm like, it's gonna be a black woman. I'll tell you that right now. Because I said it jokingly because of what come of the rumors of like a toxic work environment, stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I thought a split second, like, uh-oh, is that why he did it? And then I looked into her credentials and I'm like, wow. Tip top. Everything he got hit. She's from the area. Okay. She went to school in the area. She graduated from preschool all the way up to law school in Las Vegas. Okay. Mm-hmm. She worked for the city. She was a city attorney. She worked for casinos. She worked for the gaming board. She worked for the athletic commission. It's like everything that you want to tie into.
A lot of experience.
It's like the city, the people, education, gaming, sports. She hits all of them at high levels. Mm-hmm. She's super freaking smart. She knows the NFL because she's an NFL wife. It's just a home run everywhere you look.
So what have I been saying about the Raiders front office for as long as the show's been around? Mon Pa shop, just hiring within. You can go from the driver to the team president. It's been done, right? Mon Pa shop, which has its advantages and disadvantages. Mm-hmm. And what did I say? I'm like, all right, if you're a Mon Pa shop, you need to go the other way now. You need to get a Harvard MBA, so you know someone like that, just to balance things out, right? Like if you have an organization full of just like brainiacs with master's degrees, you need a guy who like roofed in the summer with some street smarts on top. You got to balance it out, right? Mm-hmm. So because you have a team, an organization full of mom and pops, hires within, locals, etc., I was like, all right, let's get like a Harvard MBA. Let's go big guns, right? I feel like the Raiders kind of met me halfway because she's super local, right? And you know, attorney, all that kind of stuff. But she knows her stuff, right? Wonderful resume. So this was not the perfect hire, my mind. Just in general, I like the hire, right? Just her specifically. But my general thought process was, all right, get some guy with like a couple master's degrees that can figure all this out and be the brainiac to this mom and pop shop. They kind of met me halfway. Still local, still like married, you know, married in the NFL, but she's got the resume that everyone's looking for.
Dude, she's got it all, man. I mean, I don't understand why it's a halfway thing. She's got a Juris Doctorate, so she's a freaking legit lawyer. She's worked in high-level positions. She knows how the city works. She knows how the gaming commission works. She knows how the athletic commission works.
All good things, but she also she's never left the city. Like, you learn other things when you go to, you know, a New York law firm for a while. Then,
yeah,
you
but she hasn't done politics the same in Atlanta, thing.
And then you go. It's good, different right? Things. Knowing the city is good, but when you're a team president, like, just like marketing to your fan base in Vegas for tickets is a small part of it. When you're an international brand like the Raiders, I would prefer something like that. Like, I'm not worried about the fan base in Vegas. I'm worried about the international brand and what she can do. Well, she, was, she can't do it. I'm just saying
was, her whole international. Vegas. She worked internationally for AT&T. She was had an international position there.
Well, what was her position? At the time? Was she part of that merger?
Yeah, I guess. That merger? She might have been, too. So many of them.
Trying to get you fired?
I don't know exactly what... Let me pull that up because I remember. Please talk amongst yourselves.
We'll start doing some what a winbacks, and then you can figure it out as we go. Gold Tau TAU Mayock destroyed this roster. We're talking about that was a response to one of our previous videos, and that got me thinking. Like, obviously the atrocious first round picks from Mayock stand out like a sore thumb, damn near unforgivable. But there were some good moves on that roster. Obviously, we saw our great mid round picks. This last draft class, other than the first one, I think everyone overperformed their draft spot, right? Some amazing pickups like Darren Waller, but then a bunch of atrocious free agent signings as well. Is it safe? Did Mayock destroy this Raiders roster?
He took a big part in it.
Is that the word you would use? Is destroyed?
Yeah, I definitely
mostly Mayock's say. Mostly Mayock's roster took us to the playoffs last season, or 100% Mayock's roster.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about depth, you know, 1-53, but I don't know, man. I don't know if destroy is the right word. I wouldn't necessarily use the word destroy. I would say that he definitely didn't do himself any favors, and I mean. As home run as a fifth round pick is that we've had, a fourth and fifth round picks are, it's not equal to, well, you busted on a first and second or two first, but you got a fourth and a fifth. That's even. No, because you pay the first round picks a lot more money and you have to keep them on your team when they're not performing.
Clay Farrell's making $8 million this
year. Yeah, you have to keep them on your team because it's guaranteed. So it's like, it's not the same because you can't fill needs because that money is tied up to a person that's not playing. Those free agent money that he gave away, he gave a lot of guys a lot of money that did not perform. You got Joyner, you have Kwiatkowski, you have Littleton. Like, these guys did not perform. Nassib, like, they didn't perform, and you gave them a lot of money. It's a lot of resources. So it's not equal. Just because, you know, you went 3-for-6 on your draft, oh, cool, like, it's 50%. You know, some hit, some miss. No, the early round picks are more important because, number one, they got to stay on your roster, and they pay them a ton more money.
The top 10, and again, you know, how much of it's Gruden, how much is it Mayock? This, you know, conversation going forever. But the top 10 highest paid free agent signings from the Raiders during Mayock's tenure, none of them with the team.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Not one of them.
That's absolutely awful.
John Brevart, as a lifelong Raider fan, I haven't been this excited for a season ever.
Dude.
And it's still surreal to see Davante Adams in the silver and black. Is this the most excited you've ever been for a season? I mean, after like this 2000, those Rich Gannon years?
No.
More than after 2016?
I don't know how old he is, but I was a lot more excited when we got Jerry Rice. Mm-hmm. We had a good team then, and then Jerry Rice came in. I was like, let's do it.
I was pretty jacked for the 2016 season. I kind of call it. So we were like renting Mike Trevino, my buddy, was renting a room at my house, and he doesn't watch football, and like, you know, football season starting up, it's 2016. And I'm like, hey, you're Mexican. You should probably be a Raider fan. You should probably get into it. Right. And they're going to be good this season. It's like, okay. And then we had that awesome, right? We finally made it to the playoffs after 15 years, blah, 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 blah. I think that 2016 year, I was pretty jacked. I mean, this year's good too. I mean, I don't know. We're like, where does this rank as far as like all the seasons of being a Raider fan that you've had for being jacked for a season?
Pretty high. Pretty freaking high. I would say right behind, just because I've been, you know, hurt so many times. I think it's right behind the 2017 year because we had so much success the 16 year. We won 12 games, you know, mostly the same. You know, roster coming back. I was super jacked. That's like the second most jacked I've been for a season prior to when we got Jerry Rice. This is going to be a close third just because I've been hurt so many times that I'm kind of gun shy. I'm being so super excited.
You're jaded now.
A lot of things are falling into place. I'm that abused husband that just can't get excited on about stuff.
Well, not to be a Debbie Downer, but the knock on this upcoming season is so many question marks, right? Brand new coaching,
a lot of unknown, man.
Team president, right? Like, yeah. I was more excited for 2016 because it was like, oh, we have consistency. Like, oh, Jack Del Rio's doing well. Derek Carr's figuring it out. Cooper and Crabtree are good. You know, this old line full of Pro Bowlers. Like, it's like, oh, we have all these things going well and we're keeping it and just getting better. Like, that's what I get more jacked for. It's like, oh, all the pieces, like this unit has been proven and it's better. It's like, oh, that's what I get jacked for. Now, I'm just, notice I said question mark and not worried. Like, there's a ton of question marks on this team, but there's a ton of reason for optimism.
Yeah. And again, I think that kind of like balances it out. That's why, you know, I don't know if 21st roster in the league is accurate, but I can see why they would put the Raiders there. Just because, like you said, question marks, there's a lot of question marks on the roster. There's a lot of guys that performed above their normal performance level last year. And those guys are going to be key parts of this team, and you're looking at guys who gave us flashes last year, like Hobbs, like Diablo, like Hunter Renfrow. Like, you give those guys to before, haven't done that before, did it last year. Okay, can they do it again?
Yeah,
and that's where the consistency comes into play. Now you're bringing in a new coach and a new system that's different from when they excelled previously. So I understand it, but again, I'm optimistic about what's going to happen this year.
Last one, Akenta Strom.
Kenta?
I'm assuming that's how it's said. Sure. The only good thing I can say about Dennis Allen is he got the penalties under control. Carr was drafted while he was coach, but I'm not giving him credit for that. That's right. That was like the one thing. That was like the one squad in like Raiders history that got their penalties under control. And it was Dennis fucking Allen that did it.
I can't explain it because nothing else worked for him.
Yeah.
His offense was god awful. His defense was bad. He was a defensive coach.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look. Anything under Al Davis in the last 20 years of his life, 15 years of his life, I'm not going to put on the coach, because we heard from the players that you would, you know, Rob Ryan would put something in like, here's what we're going to do this week. And then he's like, sorry, guys, can't do it. Why not? Like, in, you know, Caesar upstairs said to Nixon, we can't do it. So
so Dana White has a red phone when he sits octagon side. And it goes directly to the coordinating producer in the truck, the guy in charge of the broadcast. That's all it does. It's the red phone, right? It's like the president with the missile silos. That's all it does. He's like, hey, change this. Hey, move it along. Hey, don't ever do that again. Hey, you fucked up. Like, that's all it's there for. That exact same phone setup was in the Raiders sideline. Al Davis would just call the sideline, say, hey, coach, go deep. Do this. Do that.
Yeah. Like, he wanted to coach. He was a coach, but that was what he was. He was a coach when he started in the AFL, and that's what he continued to be throughout. And he was, you know, overstepping coaches and undermining them and telling them to change stuff and this and that. And he didn't like a 3-4. He wanted to run a 4-3. And that a lot of that stuff was changed around. And so I'm not going to, you know, that's kind of like a different world now. That world doesn't exist anymore.
Well, before we get out of here. Even after they got rid of Gruden, we still end this show with a knock on wood, if you're with me. It's just, mm-hmm. It's just a good Raider move. And then once John Gruden got canned, a couple people were like, why are you still doing that? That was Gruden's thing. They still do the knock on wood thing. They still do it. Foster Moreau was on Bussin' with the Boys, and he said, they still do the knock on wood if you're with me. Which is great, because it's like, that so much already changed in that locker, like enough change in that locker room as it was, right? Gruden gone, Ruggs. It's like, try to keep everything normal. Try to keep everything the same. Try to find some consistency. And it's a cool thing. It's their thing. It's a Raider thing. No one else does it. And so they still do it to this day. So that's why we do still do it to this day.
Yes, sir.
So that said, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Auto Windbags. We really appreciate it. Give us a follow on social media. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Until next time, later.